Welcome to the Embodied Educator podcast, where we explore the deep connection between body and mind in education. I'm your host, Liz Wintjes, and each episode we dive into how our physical presence shapes the way we learn, teach, and grow. I'll be talking with education experts from around the world, sharing their insights on embodiment in the classroom. Whether you're an educator or a lifelong learner, you'll find practical tools to explore and apply. Join me as we uncover ways to bring embodied teaching to life. Let's reshape education, one breath at a time. Before we start our rich conversation, we would love to give you already a first impression with the Improgineering course by offering a poem performance. A video version of the poem performance is accessible via the link to be found in the show notes. Improvise for Life. A poem written and read live by Joel Falterio within the Improgineering public performance presented by the EPFL students at Le Pommier Theatre on 8th of June 2024 in Neuchâtel in Switzerland.
Where is the heart? Where is the art? Still learning to be still and to listen. This is the sharing of the unknown. Take a chance, take it now. Take the now, take the stage, face the audience. Here we grow, here we glow. On the spot, cannot stop, with the flow. Take a risk, let it go. Make it up, on your feet, dance it through. As you go, leap and learn. The mechanics of the living, the milieu of the mind is writing, the mind is living, the mind is between my crossed legs. Think, but think. Art vivant, fringe art, art débordant. Kinetic art, art déroutant, body art, art magnifiant, life art, art déroulant, not living, life, art cruel. Be careful. Life could be everywhere. We are not prepared. No, we are not prepared for life. Learn to improvise and improvise to learn. You are given permission to translate into context and negotiate the structures of reality. Put words and more words and words of others together, add names, history, stories, theories. But here, we don't learn in theory. Let the animals in, let us grow our garden. We reach high, higher, highest education, touch and be touched, grasp the grips and dot to dot to dot to dot. Make sense with open eyes and ears and pores and hands and backs. Body is just another word for soul. Be prepared to improvise for life.
And then let's get back to my guests. First, I would like to welcome Simon. Simon Anein is professor in microengineering at École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne, EPFL, which I'm going to now just say EPFL. And director of a micromechanical and horological design laboratory. And in collaboration with performance artist Joel Falterio, Simon developed and teaches the course Collective Creation, Improvised Art in Engineering, of course, the Improgineering course, within the Social and Human Sciences program. Simon is also a performer himself with a training in improvisation and dance. And in 2013, he founded the dance company L'Âme de Fond with international artists, And in 2018, you initiated a research project in learning sciences entitled Performing Arts as a Pedagogical Tool in Higher Education, which led to the very interesting book Barefoot Academic Teaching with co-writers Laure Klutzler and Ramiro Tau. But next to Simon, we have Simona, and I have to pronounce your name right, Ferrar.
Yes, Ferrar.
Cool.
Fine.
All right. And she's a choreographer and performing artist in the field of dance, performance, theater, and a dramaturg, which is a study of dramatic composition and the representation of the main elements of drama on the stage. With her artistic background, she was part of the jury that is put in place for the end of the year presentation for the Improgineering project. And I'm very curious to hear her observations on how the students progressed in their improvisation and what struggles they had to meet before getting into the performance body mindset. So I'd love to welcome you, Simon and Simona.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah.
Yeah, very welcome. So, well, let's start with you, Simon, as in the founder, and you created this course. What brought you to create this course, which mixes the body and improvised arts in the field of students in engineering and education? How did that come about for you?
Yeah, so my role at the university is to teach design, so in engineering, so how to invent machines. So given a need, function, you have to invent the machine. And this process is not really easy to teach because it's not an analytical process. It's a design and synthetical process. And I do that with large classes with up to 200 students in second year. So it are beginners, and we want to bring them into this process of inventing, creating an object, an artifact based on a need which is described in specifications. And this is done collectively. Usually in engineering, people work in teams. So we also do that in my classes. We do project-based teaching in groups of 4 to 5 on concrete projects. And we don't really address how to work in team. We just put them in teams and give a question, and they have to figure out how to collaborate. And this is frustrating a little bit because we don't have time to address the issue, but it's actually fundamental. How a team coordinates itself, how it behaves as a group is fundamental. So this was the need in the field of engineering. This was my need as a teacher. And then I had my experience as a dancer and an improviser, and yeah, I knew I was using my skills learned through my artistic practice in my daily engineering life just by chance. It happened I had these two knowledges and I was mixing them. It was really helpful for me to lead my lab, to lead my research, to lead my teaching. And I'm using it daily in my professional life. And I thought this is something I should bring to my students, my engineering students. And then how to do it, I found this program, Sciences Humaines et Sociales, so Social and Human Sciences program, where it was possible to give such a course where I would go really into the arts in order to trigger these processes. And my artistic practice is about improvisation, so I used improvisation as a substrat on which to build the training.
Can we go back to the question of how did you notice that your improvisation background and dancing background showed up and helped you in daily life? And maybe that's also for you, Simona, because you also have a background in performing arts and dance. How do you notice that it helps you with skills in work or and maybe also for the students?
So, I would describe it as a sense. It's a sensation of the empty page. So there's a need. So when we improvise, you enter on stage, and you know there is a time in front of you which you're gonna fill or inhabit, but it's not known what is there. So there is this sensation of the empty page, which is the same when you have a problem and you just have to find a solution, but there is no starting point. So this sensation for me is the same, and then the lived experience of having an idea and it's not the right one and losing it and then finding out with the others how things build up with the others. So this is this sensation of at the end having a product which is the son or the child of none of us It's really the collective. Nobody can say it's me. All of us know we were all essential to it, but nobody can claim authorship. So this sensation is the same when we improvise. I cannot say I made the piece or it was my idea, this or that. I really feel the sensation of a collective product very strongly. Like it's impossible to distinguish who brought what. And this sensation is the same when I work on designing a robot or on performing on stage. And it's really this, yeah, I would say bodily sensation of the feeling of the process happening as a group, which is for me the same. I cannot just, yeah, I wouldn't see any difference in the process.
Yeah, I actually totally relate my experience in higher education with the students. I have this felt and this blank page, but they don't know. You can feel it in the room. So yeah, I actually can relate. And how is that for you, Simone?
Improvisation actually has been very important in my expression, I'd say. I think it helps me train my flexibility in life. It helps me taught me how to react here and now and to sort of develop my intuition. I feel it helps me also just take decisions and therefore develop my own criteria. And I think I really enjoy this moment of Simon was talking about the blank page of sort of suddenly thinking, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do, but something's going to happen and I'm going to enjoy it.
Trusting the process in a way.
I trust I'm going to enjoy it. Yeah. So it's also about
Yeah.
taking risks, and I think it's nice to train taking risks in life. So I think it helps me in my personal life and my on stage, of course, because I know that if something goes wrong, I can, or I mean, the way if something unexpected happens, I can react to that. I'm trained to react to unexpected
Yeah.
actions
It's beautiful
or
how
happens.
you reframed it as well. Maybe something wrong or more something unexpectedness, right? I guess that for me, because I do have a little bit of a dance background just for hobby, but not in improvisation so much. So that is a new field for me. But I guess that builds the muscle of the nothing is wrong, just the unexpectedness. And then in that container, in the collective with each other, find possibilities, maybe. Yeah. So maybe that's an entry as well into the improgineering course, as in, what do you do with the students? They enroll. It's a project that they can enroll for themselves. They choose it, so they say they
Yeah,
want
it's
to. Yeah,
elective.
it's an elective, right? Yes. Yeah. So
Yes.
that makes a difference if students have to or they can choose. Yeah. What do they sign up for? How is that year long built, and in what ways embodiment a part of the program?
Yeah, so it's a full year course, so it extends over 2 semesters. Each semester is 14 weeks, and each week they have three hours. So every Wednesday at the end of the day from 4 to 7. And so if they enroll, it's for the whole year, academic year, and they have to enroll in August. During the summer, there is a platform, and they have to be quick. The first ones who click can get a spot, and there are
Popular.
yeah. So we do yeah. So it's always full. I have up to 25 or 6 spots,
Yeah.
and I capped the number to be in a comfortable situation in the studios and as a group work.
Yeah.
So yes, I don't know how many would come if it wasn't capped, because I don't have access to this information, but I know every year it's very quickly
Oh,
full.
that's a
So we
good
could
sign.
yeah, so it's a, there is a d demand, and now the word is running. The former students encourage their friends to join.
Yeah. Oh, that's
Yeah.
beautiful. Yeah, the 3 hours, and then how is it build up? What do you take them through? Because I
Yes.
expect them to come in with 0 to just a little bit experience of performance art, right? They study something else than the performance arts. So how do you bring them in into that field, that container? And how do, yeah, let's start there.
Yes. So during the first semester, it's built around practical workshops. Each workshop is 6 hours, so 3 hours on a Wednesday and the next Wednesdays. And each of these blocks, so we have one on we call it theater or words. We can distinguish between, sometimes we call it words, simply working with words makes it easier to access than doing theater. But it's, for us, it's words and theater. The second one is music or sound, also playing with sound or going to music. The third block is movement and or dance. And the fourth one is performance with objects, so playing with objects or performing around objects.
There's already a
So,
build up there of,
yes.
yeah.
And in between these practical blocks, we have theoretical blocks. One block is I bring a sociologist who talks about the sociology of improvisation as a way of being outside of the arts. So we improvise, as now we are doing the podcast, we're improvising. When we go into the bus and we negotiate a seat, we're improvising. So we keep improvising all the time. So he explains how it works in daily life and how we can then transfer it to the scene. I have a dramaturg, and she comes and speaks about improvisation, which role it played throughout the history of theater. It's very interesting to understand. It was always there, but had different roles along the history. So it's very interesting to see that it's a key element of all performing arts. And then bring somebody more from the sciences. So the big steps in the discoveries, the big scientific discoveries, there are also some improvisation elements to them, which we can talk about. How did it happen? Which kind of people did these big steps in the history of science? So it's a bigger, broader perspective. And I talk about engineering as also a process where there is improvisation elements to them. Yeah. So this is the first semester. So it's really teaching theory and practice from September to December. And then over the spring semester, we go towards them producing. So they have as a task to prepare an improvisation piece they will present at the end of the semester publicly. So this is the task, and they have the full semester to work on the task. And all what we impose is that they're in a group of, let's say, 3 to 5 people on stage, physically present on stage. They will bring an artifact with them on stage. So they will have to prepare some scenographic element or art object or whatever they want, but something created by their hands will be brought on stage with them. And it's a 12-minute piece. And yeah, that's it. And then how we help them create, we give some more little workshops to bring back the body into motion after the break. January and February, they stop. So we bring them back to action. And then they have to lead workshops with the whole class. So they start teaching to the whole class on their research topics, if you want. So they have ideas about their performance, and they can test their ideas by having the whole class trying out what they were working on. And then we have also little rehearsals where they show us what they have, and the teachers, we give them some feedback, and the class, we give feedbacks. And that's it. And at the end, there are two public performances in an official theater in Lausanne, announced really as a normal performance. Like you can book your seat and go there and watch
You
the
buy a
piece.
ticket, it's just on the
Yeah, it's for free, but you have to reserve your ticket, and
yeah. It's like on the calendar of the
of the
theater, of
theater.
the
Yeah.
that supports your whole project for years, right?
That's it.
Yeah, so cool. It sounds like an amazing project. So you do reflective diaries. We've been talking about that before, right? And that's a way, I guess, for the students to learn to process their work. What role does that reflective diary play? And what does it show? How does it help the student to really become that a part of that performing arts, environment?
Maybe you want to, maybe Simona, since you are a reader of these diaries, maybe you want to comment on the what you think or feel the role of the diaries is.
Yes, well, I think it's so interesting hearing Simon describe this program again, because I think it's so full, not only, I mean, the practical aspect, of course, is very strong, but then all this theory that's brought into the course already stimulates a reflection, obviously, on what improvisation is about or can be about, and what it can stimulate in our practices and jobs. And then I think these reflective diaries are very moving because it really invites the students to go back to their own experience and to actually take time to listen to that own experience and to just write it down without any judgment. And I have the feeling it helps them develop awareness about what's really happening for them, which can be different for each student, of course. But I also feel every time I got in touch with these students, because I was able to meet them two or three times, actually. And I always feel they're very moved by, I mean, literally moved by what's happening in the improgineering course at a personal level, at an academic level, probably too. Yeah, I'm quite impressed by what happens. And I feel these reflective diaries, I mean, they're also very, I'd love to have I've never had one in my hand, but I've been able to read parts of them, and they're always very moving.
Are we able to share maybe an impression of a reflective diary piece?
Yes, we can. Maybe... I'll read two, if that's okay.
Go ahead. Yeah.
One is, at the beginning of the course, Simon asked the group if they had any comments or anything about the sessions they had had so far. At first, I was hesitant to express how ridiculously childish and unsuitable this circus was for me at the university level. Then, when I heard some people saying how rich, exciting, interesting, and full of potential they found it, I thought maybe I would pass. So this comes from a reflective diary from the improgineering course. And I found this, I think this one is so interesting because it also shows a tension that can maybe exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I understand this student stayed till the end, Simon, in the... Yes, something did happen. And also hearing other people reflect on what's happening. And then one other passage has to do with the relation to the teachers, which I think is very interesting. I'm reading both these from Beerfolk Academic Teaching. They both come from the book.
Yeah.
It is not clear who the teacher is in the class. Sometimes we forget that Simon is there. Moreover, there are other teachers and none of them give us clear answers about the final improvisation. We don't know who's teaching, and that gives us more freedom, but also less clarity. This comes from an interview, actually. And then there's another one from a reflexive diary. Every time we ask Simon what we should do, he answers, "What you want." Obviously, we can't expect a classic answer. Yes, I like these two because there's a lot of it shows what the shift that happens also in this hierarchical relationship that exists in universities and how it's challenged.
Yeah, it's so beautiful because, like you said, what I hear is also this tension where they come in and they have maybe some judgments and ideas of how it should be, and then they start and they meet that. And how do you work through that? What role does embodiment play in this to get them along? I'm assuming embodiment can help in a way in this. I mean, it's a whole embodied course, basically. How do you meet that tension with the students? How do you guide them through? Of course, it was in the setup already, I believe, as in to start light with theater and words and then build up. Just don't put them in improvisation straight away. You probably scare them. But what is it? How do you meet the tension also as teachers and facilitators?
Yeah, so I felt the tension more before starting the first course. I had imagined it would be a difficulty to enter.
Yeah.
But actually, it was much easier than expected.
Yeah.
So students very, very quickly adopt what we do.
So cool.
So there is it's not a difficulty. Yeah. It's you cannot do it quicker, slower, whatever. But it's not, we don't feel it as a, it's not a barrier to come to cross, or it's not a fear to come over. All that we try to It's not, this is not the topic. So we're not pushing them. The goal is not to go beyond what any kind of limits. All this is not part of our teaching and our speech as teachers. So it's not about, going further or pushing, or all this is not there. So maybe there for individually, maybe some of them are leaving this, but it's not our goal to bring them beyond any kind of something. So we are out of that. And what we do is we very carefully choose the teachers, and it's really about the relationship these teachers manage to build with them during the workshops. So it's really about, welcoming them as they are and being light and a bit, easy. It's very easy what we do. We do very simple and easy and elementary things, which make them feel part of it, I think. And then once they are in, then we go, and then nobody believes how far they go. But it's just about them. Yeah, you have to embark, which happens very quickly. And once they're inside, we can go extremely far. So it's fantastic, the sensation. And then they want more, and they want more, and they want more, and they ask for, sometimes they stay after the class to do more, and they meet, or if somebody couldn't come, they do it in the kitchen. Somebody teaches the class again to try to. So it's really, they are hungry, 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 hungry. So it's,
Interesting. And what does it ask from you as a teacher? Because you described this in the book very clearly. There's quite a traditional setup for a university, especially also a teaching room where the teacher's in front. Sometimes you walk through the room and there's this hierarchy, and maybe you can put it in the corner of authority some places where the students sit down and they listen and they ask questions, but then there's, this distance. And in this field, it sounds like also with the reflective diaries you just read out loud, that you're becoming part of the group, of the collective as well. How is that for you as a teacher? And what does that bring you as a teacher?
Basically, as we are improvising, I'm not in improvisation. There's no somebody who, nobody knows better what's going to happen. So we're equal in the terms of what we create on stage. We're anyhow equal per definition. And then as I invite other teachers, I take the class with them. So when the musician comes, I'm not better than the students. There's no reason why so I really, I'm just one participant in the workshop with them, and they see me just enjoying and trying to learn. And there is no difference in these moments where I'm a participant. So the difference is that I'm responsible for the course, and I give the frame, and they have to deliver there are deadlines and all that. I'm strict, and I have the authority with the frame, but that's all. And I don't try to go beyond that frame. I just use the authority where it's needed, because it's within a university setting, and I have also a frame I have to respect. So in order for me to respect the frame of the university, I have to have them respect the frame I put. But beyond that, I don't go. I don't use this power I have over the situation beyond only this frame.
It sounds like the improvisation framework is quite of the setup already that provides that freedom of the collective to be allowed to be there in the room. So I guess that's what I'm picking up from what I hear you say.
And I think, and then for me, it's a very important thing is that seeing me learning and practicing and trying and maybe failing is very, they learn. I think for me, it's a fantastic thing to see a teacher learning or struggling or not managing, or you learn much more than just seeing the successful act of the teacher. If you see a teacher failing at his equation or failing on his instrument or searching, or you learn a lot from that. So I know by exposing myself in a situation where I am, not better than them, they learn maybe more than showing my expertise, my virtuosity in any kind of thing. So I know I'm aware of that,
You're putting
and
yourself.
I think it's just working. It's not difficult to do. Just you do it, and it works. It's nothing magic. Just we usually don't go there, but my experience is that if you go there, it's good for everyone.
So you basically put yourself back in the student's role as well. You just not from teacher, but also in a student as a learner there.
And then and then in over spring they teach really the workshop. So it's not me seeing me following another teacher. They are my teacher, and I just take their workshop. And it's the same at the end. It's not a big. It looks maybe on paper as an upheaval, but actually it's very simple. That's the teacher I follow. There's no big deal, but it's wonderful. And for me, it's wonderful to. I love when I see how well they teach, and I get inspired from what they do, and I dive into the workshop. I take my class as a participant. I love that. So it's really just pleasure. And I think for them, it's they feel also empowered, and they feel that what they have to bring is rich and can feed everyone, including the teacher.
So cool. Before we go to the impact, because it already triggers me to ask questions about the impact, but maybe first let's get to the end of how do they finalize the course, as also you being a jury member, Simona, and just to wrap up the course, how do they in the end succeed in this? What is good in this work? What is professional? What is enough? How do they perform and show their case, and how do you look at that from the jury perspective as well, their growth?
I'm each time amazed by how they engage on stage. They're completely involved in what they're doing. They do it. They take risks. They play. I can see that they're moving through something, through an experience that they've been working on for some time. That they have criteria that they've developed together, and that they know each other too, that they're used to working as a group. I feel that a lot. And I feel also that I feel the pleasure of the process. Often the students, I've heard that a few times, but they often talk about how sad they are not to be able to share more of the process with the public, of all everything they went through during the year. And they feel that showing this performance, end of year performance, is somehow just the tip of the iceberg of everything they've experienced, and that they'd love to share more of the process. And I think that's very interesting to hear. But I also feel how rich this process is when I see them on stage. And I find it also very interesting because it's not like watching a, let's say I don't like this term very much, but an amateur group, for example, or a group that defines itself as amateur sort of performing on stage. I really feel I see students who are thinking from with their own experience, with their own mindset, who maybe come from other areas than the arts. But they really bring their own personal thought process onto stage and into their bodies. And I just find it fascinating each time. So it's amazing to watch. And there's a big part of pleasure. And I think you had something more in your question that I haven't answered yet.
The grading, so the show, and then this sounds like they really are like having so much fun, and the pleasure and the process is only slightly there, and then the presence on the stage is amazing and rich. And then how do you grade? How do you look at that? Because I mean, in the end, you are in a school and you need to have some qualities been put to the work they put out there. So how do you look at it from that more teacher perspective?
I'd say it's very difficult because I'm not one of their teachers, and also the members of the jury that I think that's very interesting are not all artists. Some of them are teachers from the EPFL, some of them last time there was an architect with us too, and they so it's not all people who come with the same kind of criteria. It's not all the specialists coming from one field, and I find that of course interesting too. So I think I just try to apply the criteria from my field and my experience, but it's difficult to do. It's difficult because I don't know, although I can feel their process, I don't know it that well. So it's also difficult to know where they stand. And Yeah, what I try to do is just point out what I reacted to personally, what inspired me, what gave me ideas for developing what they're doing.
How is that received by them when you give that back to them? How do they respond?
Yes, I think that's very interesting. Maybe Simon, I'd like to comment on it, but maybe Simon, you can answer first because you hear them more often than I did. I heard their reactions once and I found it was quite interesting actually how they relate to feedback. But maybe Simon, you just want to give a more global vision of that first.
So grading is a question which comes always with the when we talk about this course because it's a difficult one. So I can answer first practically what we do. So I have to give grades. So my wish would be to give a pass fail or pass abandon or pass quit
Exactly,
thing,
yeah.
but it's not allowed in our system, so I have to give a grade. So this is my constraints. So I didn't choose it, I have to comply with this.
Exactly, yeah.
So what we do, for the performance part, we have the jury. So this is what is done usually when you have a typical engineering project where it's not easy. Again, if you or an architectural project, it's not easy to say which one is best, but you bring a jury of competent people and you ask the jury and you agree then on the judgment of the jury. If you do a PhD, it's the same. You do a PhD and you have a jury and it's a group of mem so a panel of people with experience. We agree that as a group they have their judgment has a value. So this is what we do for the performance part. Although it's difficult for them, but at least I give the problem to the jury. So I'm released from it. I say, okay, the jury said it's good or bad, or
Yeah.
so this is one trick I have. And the rest we judge the so we ask them to digest what we teach them. So they have to do, for example, little videos about some of the questions which were treated on the theoretical part and to link them with the practice. So there are things, outputs which are more classical outputs about, let's say, reflection about the content. And they deliver to us either written or in form of little videos, and we judge this or they have to make a presentation as a group around questions. So we bring like classical little exercises within the class where they have to digest because it's so much material that it's really good for them to read again, look back at the diaries, look at the notes, and give some summary like what they've learned. So this is banal if you want, and it just happens along the year, and it's not central and not so we don't focus so much. But for me now, if you go back, grading has two functions. So one function is to eliminate the ones who wouldn't come, or if a student never comes, never show up, he
Like a
shouldn't get the
basic
grade, or she
level.
shouldn't. Yeah. So this is one role of grading. And so this we never have problems. So no, none, no, we never had a student quitting the class. So it's in our case, it's not an issue. So everybody passes. And everybody stays, and it's not a there's no debate around that. And the other thing is now is to define some kind of level, very good, and this is the difficult part. But usually, it's useful for a student to get as a feedback to know I'm good, or I could improve, or I'm excellent, because it's helpful for oneself as during our learning process. It's good to know how far we are from some kind of goal. So this I don't believe now in the grades in our class to do that, but I believe in feedback. So I find feedback very important. So I keep providing the students with feedback. So the public performance is one big feedback because they hear the smiles, the laughs, the whatever, their friends, everybody. So there is a round table after the class where the public and the jury gives feedback. We read because you ask the jury not only to give grades, but to write feedbacks about what they wrote. And then we select the feedbacks and we read to the students these feedbacks. And then they also during their when they teach their workshops, they also get feedback from the class. We also invite artists during the creation process to give to them feedback. So it's full of feedbacks if you want. So it's mega feedback compared to a classical course where you just get your grade. They get plenty of feedback, and most of the feedback it comes from outside of the academic realm. So for me, this is the most interesting thing because now they work for the real world and they get feedback from the real world. And in addition, there are some grades, but grades become secondary. This is my hope. Of course, each student can judge differently, but there's so much intense feedback from the outside world that I hope the grade becomes a just one little parameter and nobody
Yeah.
cares. They what remember is the amazed brother or sister or mother or whoever was
And
in
their
the room, and this
experience,
is the
right?
feedback.
And their
Yes,
felt
and so and this,
experience.
yeah, and this is the grades for me.
Yeah.
Am I good? Let's remember what my friends told me or
Yeah.
what the laughs of the audience. This is my grade. If I got a 5 or a 5.5 or whatever, nobody cares, and we will forget. This is my hope. But some of them still are can ask, and so I cannot escape totally the topic. But this is what I try to do with them.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe I don't know if we, just to finish, if Simona you wants to make comment on the this year, what was interesting, the moment where we gave the feedback.
Yes, Joël sort of made a selection, quite a complete selection of the feedback that the jury gave and read it to the students. And yeah, so one thing I'd like to add was I remember Simon and Joël saying that one reason for the jury is actually one thing that happens with having a jury is actually that their work is being looked at and taken sort of seriously. And I think that's also an interesting aspect of having a jury, that actually something, this is being taken seriously in a nice way, of course. But yes, with respect to the feedback, I assisted. I was there when Joël read it to them, and some of them reacted very warmly, but others also felt, because some of the feedback was slightly critical too, and some of them felt very sort of shaken by what was being said, and then suddenly felt it wasn't so good, and I realized how powerful feedback can be, and what a power it can have on us, what an authority it can become. But also I think because students are so used to getting grades and this is good, this is not good, and so I also would have liked to, oh, I think I did then encourage them to just not take this feedback so seriously, to try and decide if they wanted to accept it or not, or to understand that a lot of it was, of course, subjective impressions, personal impressions from wherever people stand. So I thought it was very interesting to think about that. How much authority do we give to what other people think about our work and about our actions and how they react to it? And then, of course, how much authority do I accept to take on as a jury too? But it also makes me reflect on what we go through as artists, because of course we are exposed when we're on stage, and we can suddenly have a horrible article in the public newspaper about our work, or a very nice article. And so what
The
happens
review.
with all this, or just people reacting to our work in a way, saying we like it, we don't like it, or I mean, it is, of course, it is difficult, but it's something I think as artists or as I've at least learned to work on this, to see how can I deal with external feedback? What do I do with it? How can I use it? How does it shape me? And I think that's also an interesting question to bring in the academic sphere, because there's so much pressure and competitivity.
Yeah, beautiful. I think it really.
Maybe it brings me, I have an hearing Simona. Some of the years, students were asking me for more of my opinions, because they were creating the pieces, and I was like neutral, or somehow I didn't express my own judgment or subjective opinions, and some were asking me for more. We said, but what do you think? Do you like it? What do you don't like? But I said, but it's not my role now to like it or not, because I also, of course, I have my taste and so on, but this is not the moment. But they wanted that. So some want more, and this year, for example, I was more, I brought more of this subjective. I'm explicitly subjective. I say this is my opinion, but I share it with you because I'm a human here watching you. And this year, some didn't like hearing my opinion. So it's a really subtle thing, and it's very interesting to work. I mean, to this again, to this, there's no right or wrong. It's more about learning what is the feedback. So for me, learning to give feedback, but for them to learn how to handle, as Simona very nicely explained.
That's a competence on its own, I believe. And that's maybe also because what you're saying is resonating with me, as in embodiment makes it that everybody receives it differently, right? So what works for one person doesn't work for the other. So you sharing sometimes your experience, I guess, especially in an area of dance, improvisation, theater, it's when you go in that subjective level, it's with your body and your experience in that present moment. And that can be different next time. So the need for leaning into that feedback and level of comparing that they feel the urge for, to discover where that comes from is interesting topic, I guess, relating to feedback and embodiment. So I have three more questions that are still alive in me that I'd love to put on you. And one being because the podcast is always also about experience, and I feel maybe this is a moment where I can put it in, as in to have a practice moment of how can you give the listeners just a brief felt sense or some kind of experience of what it is to work with theater improvisations. Just a slight improgeneering impression. Is that possible?
Yeah, so I thought about what could be done in a podcast frame, and yeah, I thought of one little exercise we do with them in the warm-up during our classes, which is about gaze, how to use the eyes on stage,
Yes.
because yeah, they play a very important role in us perceiving the situation. So what I was proposing to the listener to do now would be to look somewhere in front of you, and anywhere, doesn't important, not important where, and to not move the eyes anymore. So as we look somewhere, which maybe choose a point, let's say in front of us, there is a line of sight, and the eyes are following this line of sight. And vision is much broader than this point. Actually, as we look at this point in front of us, we can now pay attention to the peripheral view which the eye offers. And actually, it's very broad. And we can now, without not moving the eyes, look at something. So the word "look" is not the right one. We don't have the word, but put the attention onto a region of our peripheral vision where something is lying. For example, I have here a plant, so I'm looking straight in front of me, and on maybe 45 degrees from my line of sight, there is a plant, a green plant, and I can travel or watch this plant with my attention, and I can really sweep my gaze, but it's not gaze anymore, but my attention on my field of view along the plant, and I can very calmly explore it as a painting. What arrives on my in my eyes is like a broad, very broad painting, and without moving the eye, I can visit the painting. So now I visit the plant on my right, but I can visit the lamp on my left. I can watch a bit of the ceiling. I can see the table, maybe the floor underneath, and I'm not moving the eyes. I'm just moving my attention. And by doing that, I learned many things. One thing is that, yeah, I'm collecting, actually in reality, collecting much, much more information than just where I'm looking at, so much more than the line of sight. And as I do that, things are automatically put in context because they're not elements, it's a whole. So I can capture my world as a whole and not as elements. And it's technically feasible. So what we're doing now is not difficult. We just had to put our attention onto doing it. But once we do it, we can really see this whole picture as a whole picture. It's like if you take a photograph, you take the whole photograph. Photograph is not made of pixels. It's just a photograph if you take the old photographs. So once you manage that, you can try to turn your head and stay with this gaze, which we call it the broad gaze, and try not, because we were very often shocked by the line of sight, but try not to be absorbed by it. And this now in an improvisation setting is central because this is what we will be doing. Improvisation, all what the acts we do are relating to the situation. So we need to encompass the situation in our actions. And a way to do that is to have this sight. And of course, now this sight we can broaden to also the hearing. So also we can try to hear broadly and generalize, if you want, what I'm trying now with sight to all our senses and keep this mode of perceiving all the way on, and based on that, do things. But it's not important what we do. What's important is actually what we see, what we hear, what we feel is the center. So we keep our attention is on perceiving broadly, and we put 100% of it on this action. This is what we do consciously, and the rest happens by itself if one wishes. So this would be one, yeah, like little things. It's nice. I like it because it's physical and technical, but then you can bring it further also metaphorically. It's beyond perspective. Perspective is changing angle, but still by having a line of sight. So it's more than perspective. It's beyond perspective. It's like some kind of global perception, which is for me the thing to learn. If you learn that, if you manage this, then you will perform act as a group in an effective or a truly improvised and situated way. So I hope it's.
Thank you. Yeah. No, that was actually my sensation as well. As in, by making me aware of the peripheral view, you immediately zoom out and not just hyper focus, which makes me aware of my surrounding. I'm like, I could even lean back a little bit into my backrest. I noticed just by accepting, oh yeah, there's more to, even without the gaze, to take into account, take into my senses. So it resonates very well also with connecting to the collective, connecting to the world, connecting to the space around you. Yeah.
And then a nice thing which I didn't talk about is also seeing your own body, because you can, if you have your hand, yeah, for example, if you play with your hand, yeah, it can be seen or not seen. Uh-huh. And it's very interesting to what is the difference between my hand here, which, yeah, where I don't see it.
You put it behind you, outside that frame. Yeah.
So all this, it brings also the perception of the own body, because embodiment, there is a question, is it only from inside I feel my body from inside, or I can see my body? What is the difference? Does it belong? Is it part of my perception of my body to see it or not see it? So it's a very interesting question about perception. It brings automatically a question about perception, because what it means to perceive my hand, is it the same as perceiving a plant, or is perceiving my hand? Because I see both, but one is felt from inside, one is only seen. Mm-hmm. And all this, so it brings lots of fundamental deep questions in a very pragmatic and simple way.
Yeah. And what you also, I think, put out is like then to also explore from different senses, right? To connect to those different ways of perceiving, because with touch, all of a sudden, it becomes very different compared to just looking. Like then I can look at the hand, look at the bottle. But when I touch, there's also, yeah, so these senses are very, yeah, interestingly brought in.
What I think Simon also mentioned, it was an exercise used to work on being on stage, on being present on stage. Did you say that? But I think that's also what's interesting, because it puts one in a state of awareness, which is not our daily, I mean, our everyday life state of awareness necessarily. Mm-hmm. So I find that aspect interesting too, to watch people who are doing this exercise, that they have a different kind of presence than people who are just shuffling around in their
go
office.
Through the motions, or step into their present.
Yeah, so it's different. No, I didn't bring it now in the exercise, but it's absolutely true. And one of the definition of improvisation is to put on stage the perception process. Mm-hmm. So seeing people perceiving is actually fascinating as a performative act. So being on stage while you perceive, you usually are very present, and you are very interesting to watch from the outside. Mm-hmm. So we could say improvisation is putting perception as a process onto the stage. And as an audience, what I do when I'm watching an improviser, I watch somebody perceiving. And perception is so rich and difficult or magic or interesting that it's enough. Just seeing somebody perceiving is a fantastic performative action. So it brings, it's maybe this is presence. Actually, it's being present is perceiving.
Yeah.
So having a performer very present on stage, it means it's a performer who is perceiving. And so that is now the performative side of perception,
Yeah.
which I didn't bring now in my little exercise, which was more me and the world.
Yeah.
But now, if we put it on stage
Yeah.
or in a perf
Even a
collective situation
classroom.
or professional situation or a teacher, all
Yeah.
that, this is seen. We see if people are perceiving or not, it's visible.
Yeah.
And it gives a totally different presence to the performer. Yeah.
Yeah, and it made me think of the role of the audience as well is so important in that space, right? And so putting it in the classroom even it immediately triggers my setting of if you also activate the students in their way of perceiving and making that classroom count and their the teacher and how they perceive the teacher being present is as much part of the classroom as the teacher just sending out the content, right? It's on a deeper layer. That's what's coming alive for me now in sharing this layer. Is that the role that an audience play in improvisation especially, or is there more to put in an audience as well as they're in the room? And you also talked about the importance of the collective. I think you meant very much the collective of the students, right? As in the group. Or is it also with the audience as one in the total? How does that relate to each other in the learning space?
Yeah, so of course there are, all of these are true, and it just scales. And then even if you put the audience, and then you can put society around it, because there are people who are maybe in the street, or maybe people see you going to the theater,
Yeah.
or maybe people seeing the video of what happened. So it's the collective. All these layers are all somehow true to what we are doing. And
I like that ripple effect.
Then if for me, is it at one level, it's not there is no real separation. So it's questionable. Is there a stage and an audience? There is something about, we know that as we watch, some things are triggered in our own bodies as we see people moving. Now it's proven also that it's also happening. So the frontier is not so important at one stage. And it's imp what I like is to have the audience feel that they could be on stage the next second. The situation is reversible. This is why we have the discussion, and when we have the discussion, maybe the mic goes to the audience, and the audience become the performer. And so we want to, yeah, we're not interested in separating the two. We need two, but it doesn't matter who is who. It's not A and B. It's A and A and A and A, and we're all in.
They
Yeah,
all
yeah,
wants a
yeah.
receiver. Like,
So it's good to blur this, and I think the students, by going on stage, it changes. If you've been on stage once in your life, when next time you go to the theater, it's a different sensation, because you could be there, and this is important to happen, to keep alive the whole time. So we try, yeah,
Yeah.
this to, yeah, having this rotating roles, chairs rotating is very important.
Yeah.
Everybody should feel it's at any moment it could be the other one. I could be the teacher, I could be
Yeah.
the president, I could be the person in jail, I could be any of these roles. We are all
I have
It's
a feeling
exchangeable.
that whoever is in the audience
Yeah.
position, and that can of course rotate, but whoever is in the audience position is also sort of expected to participate with the thought process. With I sometimes I also realize some members of the audience maybe came in with sort of expectations, you know, the kind of expectations one can have when going to a theater. We're going to see a story, we're going to see a dance, we're going to see something. And here, of course, they come and see improvisation done by students who are also still searching and experimenting. And I feel that as an audience, one does become a bit of a dramaturg in those situations where you have to participate with your with your personal experience, with your personal imagination, with how, what are you going to make out of this? And of course, the experience can be very different from one person to the next. So I have the feeling, Simon, correct me, but I have the feeling you do a lot of this sort of becoming audience during the workshops you have with the students too. That's not only about actually practicing and doing and performing, but it's also about observing other people perform and practicing dance, and then learning from that or learning from observation. It is part of improvisation.
Yeah, yeah, totally agree. Because actually, the one thing one needs to learn while going on stage is to learn what is an audience. And actually, there is a misconception about what an audience is. So we learn to become. So to be a good performer, you have to learn to be to understand how a watcher watches, or and what we try to make students discover is that as a watcher, I'm projecting lots of things which are mine onto what is on stage. But actually, what I see is not what is on stage, is the projection of what I project onto what is on stage. So it's the, like there is a, maybe a performer is a surface on which I project. And what I see is my projection onto this surface. So I need a surface, so I need a performer, but I need what I project. And what I see is the meeting of my projection onto what's shown. And I use for that the, I like very much to show the hollow mask illusion. It's a very known illusion where there's a, it's a mask of a face, but the face is negative. So it's, and if you look at the hollow mask, so it's a negative face made negative, you see it positive. So it's very, very difficult to see a hollow mask positive, although it's negative. Because we are we have an a priori knowledge that a face usually has a nose sticking out and the cheek sticking out and the eyes are maybe more in. So we know this from our from our whole life. So we if we see something looking like a face, we correct the concave versus convex shape because of our a priori knowledge. And this is if you see it, you cannot fight it. You always see it positive. You can put even your hand into the thing, and you still there is a struggle, and you cannot deconstruct it. It's very deep, and it's a proof for me that what you see is not what it is. What things are, you see what you project on things, and then if you understand that, once you're on stage, you're not responsible for what people see. You're just proposing a substract on which people will project what they want to project. So they will make their own story. They will see what they want to see. And I'm not responsible for what they see. And this is very constructive, again, for on stage, but then as also as humans, we're not responsible for what people think of us or make out of us, and so on.
Do the students get that? Do you see when that, when they think, aha, when they have that aha moment with this? Because I'm like, oh yeah. Do they, does it, that, do you see that impact on
So
them?
it comes
That
if you ask quite so if you have time to ask the audience what each person from the audience what they've seen after a piece, it's fantastic because you get 10 different stories if you have 10 people. And by doing that all the time, at the moment you stop hoping they will see what you want them to see because it never works, especially with what we do. It's very abstract and we try to stop wanting them to see something concrete or specific because it's hopeless. Or then you have to, yeah, it becomes very boring because it's just about your idea being transmitted to somebody else. And we will go much beyond this strict idea you want people to understand. So it's not, there are no ideas and there's nothing to understand. So once we break this, they give up. Maybe at the beginning they want this, but then at one point they give up. And then you feel much more inspired and free and you just want to give food, but you don't know what they're going to eat.
You collect and you gather and you just see what's there. Ah, that brings back the pleasure inside me, actually, while you talk about this, like when you can let go of that control that sounds present in, oh yeah, I want to feel this and come across like this, and then one, two, three, no, it didn't work. Oh, and then daring to lean in. Wow, that can create such pleasure. Are the students They don't disenroll, so they're having fun for sure. What is the impact of this on them? What do you hear them say after they've finished this course, and what do they take along?
Yeah, so it's a question I ask them all the time. So we keep asking them, and each time I'm interested in each student, because actually for me it's the course is a trip, and each of them takes from the trip what he or she needs, wants. So I'm not aiming for something for them to learn. So I don't have a specific goal. So when I have to fill the form with the learning outcomes, it's very difficult. So it would, or it's very global things. I don't have a specific learning outcome. But now to answer, yeah, well, for me, I think what they learn is that what they are and what they produce from themselves as a source has value. Because usually at university, what has value is what you've learned and what you do with what you've learned. So it has an external reference. It goes back to, I know what is in this book, or I learned this topic. There's no topic, there's no book. We remove that, it's just them and they produce. And we put light, and so really concrete lights on stage, but light through the diaries, the videos, all the books, all those, the study we're on. So they feel that just what they are and they produce from themselves has value. And this is, I think, missing at the university. And this is what we want, because at the end of the day, we want them to create and we want them to make the world of tomorrow. And the world of tomorrow is not in the books. They will do it from themselves. So at one, we need some moments during in the curriculum where what they produce as humans, simply not in reference to history or to science or to knowledge which is behind them, or in the past, if you want. What they produce on the moment from out of themselves has value, and it's proven, because we had Full House at the theater. The book has been printed and it's sold. It's proof. It's proven. They cannot say it's bullshit. It's not bullshit, because I mean it's proven. So then they trust. They have trust into what they are and what they can produce out of themselves. Although they're only 20 years old or 18 years old, doesn't matter. At any moment in our lives, we have this richness, and I think this is, for me, this is what's really new in their experience as students, because usually we're not celebrated for that. Maybe our parents do it, or maybe,
Sense of
yeah, sorry.
agency, right?
Yeah.
The agency, it sounds like sense of agency, and
So I would say this is what's very different from classical classes. And I would say all of them somehow would agree with that, I think. If I had to give one element which would be general, yeah.
And maybe also I was taking back my notes from the presentation that Melanie gave about this program, and she spoke about the impact and also regarding teamwork, that it fosters the ability to listen, to collaborate, and build on each other's ideas, which was, I think, very impactful, and a sense of belonging, which I thought was beautiful. So I'm curious if you can elaborate on that. And also the element of well-being, which was interesting, that was also named. Can you elaborate when I give those back, on what the impact was on those levels?
Yeah, so yeah, for the collective part, there is what I said a bit at the beginning, that we should give up authorship as individuals. So really, it becomes a group writing something, and we agree that this thing couldn't exist. And this is very different from what, for example, if you have a patent or you publish papers, usually in our academia, it's very strict, and there are rules about who is author of what. And this is we're trying to sort out, which is good for some. Some elements it's good, but for some other elements it's bad, because it kills the potential as a group. It can kill the potential as a group. So it's good to go the other direction and forget about that and really be a group. And for we don't care at all who is who and who did what and all that within the creation process. And this may be for the group and authorship and ownership, which is, I think, can be a negative force within collective creative actions. And maybe if you mentioned other ones, maybe you can.
Sense of belonging, well-being, teamwork, and the fourth one I didn't get to
Okay.
write because I was too slow.
Yeah, and then there is also this thing that as a group, so For them, it's they all, since they come from different sections at TPFL, when they come to engineering class, they don't know each other. Most of them don't know each other, and they very
Okay,
quickly form
yeah.
a group of friends, and they go having drinks after class and all that. And this is much quicker. This is
Yeah.
what they say, yeah, much quicker than in other classes. So yeah, so it
Yeah.
seems that there is some social aspect. It's very helpful socially to connect people. So this is not the goal of my class, but it's like a side effect that people
Yeah.
like each
Yeah.
other,
Yeah.
love each other, want to stay with. So that it creates a great social bond and a respectful bond between them, and yeah, an acceptance between them, which is stronger than other ways of collective work, which is a good sign, and which is very healthy. So then we go to more personal development side and the psychological or mental health issue. All that is it's very positive on those aspects as well, which is of course a very good sign. So it's not again, it's not the goal of the course, but they speak a lot about it because they suffer globally. Studies is very stressful, and there is a lot of suffering. This comes in the diaries, and this class is a relief. It's comforting. Is a breath, a place where they can breathe and relax and be what they want to be. So all these very positive sensations are. Size, yeah, very, very often found in the diaries.
That's interesting. That's beautiful. Yeah, because I had a different experiences in the way I set up Bildung with a lot of, well, not dancing, but embodiment. And then they perceived it as deeper, too much digging and very heavy, although they were trend watching and doing all this cool stuff. So I had a different experience. So it's so nice to hear that it just also depends on the context, how it lands, and that they are very willing and able and really thrive on that sense of belonging that's so present in this collective setup. Yeah. Is there also like a downside is not the word, but an impact that's like that maybe puts it in a different frame than you all set up and yeah.
Yeah, so it's not an easy course to sell if you were to give
Ah,
it
okay.
elsewhere. So now I'm working hard on to selling it with the research we're doing around it, the papers, the video. So there is
Yeah.
a so I'm doing I think I'm doing well.
Lots of
Yeah, but
PR,
it's not
yeah.
immediate and it's not easy in words to explain what it is, to show the strength of it. So it's not as easy to prove that it's at the right place. Maybe it's a good course, but maybe it shouldn't be at the university. Why is it there? What do they get? All these questions are very difficult to
Exactly.
answer.
The frame of
Yeah.
the university doesn't work
Or
with what
necessarily
you're
not
doing.
doesn't necessarily it's not easy to convince people who haven't been there. So I try also to invite important people from the university to come and see what we're doing. So to be seen, so for them to understand. This is why I'm happy to do a podcast or all kind of I like having all these voices. The students, unfortunately, we don't have one today, but students from the diaries, teachers, people who come, the jury, all these voices, where they cross, I think this is the proof of the value. So I try to collect as many voices from as many places and backgrounds as possible to build the strength and hopefully have the thing rolling beyond my own teaching with my own little class of 24 students. The hope is to spread much broader.
Ripple, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, very nice. Yeah, I feel like one topic is left, and that's the book, the with the wonderful title, which I can't recall. So help me.
Barefoot academic teaching.
Barefoot Academic Teaching, yeah, where I believe all comes together, as in, okay, you've run this course for several years. I think you're going into the seventh round now. And so what, because I would label this definitely as embodied education. What does this bring to education, and how are you bringing this forward into the educational world? And, if you could dream big, what would you like to happen? Because it sounds, well, of course, I'm a big fan. You must know that already. So impactful and useful for more students than you're reaching now. So, how can you spread this further? Or is that maybe your ambition or not?
Yeah, sure. So as since it's very touching for us to see how positive the feedback is from all students, so we would like more students to benefit from that. So
Yeah.
it's actually a very concrete question for me. And so I thought about many, many things. One thing would be now not to touch the students, but the teachers. So we tried. So we did a 2 years ago a pilot workshop for teachers, which actually doing the same but with teachers, and we want to go further into this direction. So this is
Oh,
one way to
lovely.
go. So
Yeah.
if you just take 5%, 2% of what we're doing, maybe it percolates down broader. So this is
Definitely.
one way to go. Then, yeah, now we are launching with Simona a new platform which is called Performance Lighthouse at EPFL,
Yeah.
where we're trying to have
Yeah.
a platform to offer other occasions than this course for students to perform. Maybe we want to maybe say a few words, Simona, about the lighthouse.
Yes, it's new. And yes, the idea is to sort of create other situations where these kind of experiences can happen. So we're still defining what exactly and how, but the idea is to involve the students in the process, which can and also maybe the teachers. And maybe to create relationships between the students and the teachers, maybe through the students teaching workshops or to the teachers or maybe activating artistic projects on the campus or outside, or just having an artist residency with some artists and sort of creating projects with the students and for the students and for the campus. And with a relation to the outside world too, because we're also meeting people from theaters. I think that's also an interesting part of Impressioneering. It actually happens within a theater. So we're also looking for possibilities to continue sort of being in and outside the campus and creating bridges.
Yeah, so we didn't mention this, so it's important to mention that the course is happening 100% or 95% in the ARSENIC, which is a center for contemporary arts in Lausanne, which are offering us the access to the studio for free, and they offer also access to the pieces which happen on that day of the classes to all students, so they can go for free on the Wednesdays, watch the pieces in ARSENIC. And they're very happy to have us there because it brings an audience which usually doesn't come. So these students from EFL in general don't go to these places. So it brings a new audience. And then the artists of ARSENIC are very interesting to see what are these students and to work with them, give them feedback. We also invite them to the artists to explain their working processes to the students. So there is really a meeting between the students and the artists. And there is a demand from, it's really beautiful for us to feel that there is a demand from the artistic world to also get in contact with EPFL. It's not only EPFL who wants to shine outside of the walls of the university. It's also the city wants to see these students, what they are, who they are, what they do. And this meeting is really both happening both ways. And for us, all these artistic endeavors are also a way to connect the university with the city, which is not an easy, the point of connection are, there are many, but they're not sometimes not so easy to make happen concretely. So these are events for me where the university meets the city for true. It's really everybody's touch both ways, and this the links stay. It's not open doors or just a talk or it's a real meeting, and this is not easy to make happen. And we look forward with the this is why the idea of lighthouse. It's a point of ralliement. So people, we will go there and meet for true. It could be both ways. Artists coming to EPFL, we go on stage, whatever, but creating a meeting situation, which is not so easy. You're beyond
No.
usual conferences and things like that.
Definitely. Yeah. Where it's more one way focused. Yeah. And it sounds also very sustainable because you're building this constantly over time and those meetings keep on happening. So you're really embedding in this collective of the arts that's bringing in and sharing and also listening to the new generation that you're bringing forth to voice. So, yeah. Wow, that sounds like a fundamental part of this course, and sounds also very thankful to be able to co-work in
Yeah,
that.
for me, so
Yeah.
it's, I'm really lucky because I'm getting support from the Collège des Humanités to teach the course. Because the teacher that I invite, I have to pay. So the school is supporting me, and the
Yeah.
theater is supporting me. All this support is also magic. So it's, I get the support. So I'm thankful because there's no reason. It's just, yeah.
Well, there is, because you bring forth such beautiful programs and
But it
students,
is, yeah, but
but
it's so
yeah.
special that it's not easy. It's not like a place where you go to get money for that. It's something
Yeah.
which has no name, and you have to make
Yeah.
people fond of it to keep
Yeah.
going. But I think
Yeah.
people, I feel the need from all sides, and the energies are positive. So I thought I would have to fight, but actually there is no fight at all. It's just coping with all the positive energy, which is also a job, but it's a nice job.
That's where your personal embodiment tools come in. Well, it sounds very wonderful, and like the world, like the university and the city is resonating with this, which is just such a beautiful and I think very inspiring yeah, collective that I love now being able to share with others. So what's available? And I think, well, as my reflection from hearing and being with you and experiencing this, it's how people resonate with the way you bring forth the work, which is really on a sustainable, profound, very open and light way into how it is to be a real human in the academic world and in the art world. So yeah.
For me, it's a fantastic opportunity too, because I remember at school we used to have drawing and a little bit of theater, a little bit, not much, very little of all that, and that's what I really loved. And I remember,
Yeah.
I can't remember if we actually got grades for those activities, but if we did, they didn't have much value in our grading system.
Only like
I was always very frustrated because I thought, well, this is what I'm good at. I'd like to have more of this. And anyway. And now suddenly I have the opportunity to actually activate artistic processes within a university, and I think it's so enriching for, I mean, I see there's a real potential there. I feel that practicing art, not just making art, but actually practicing, having an artistic practice, can bring so much to so many different people. So it's really, I'm very happy to be in there. And I'd like to mention also that in this book, Barefoot Academic Teaching, this is Simon and Joël and Laure Klotzer wrote a recipe for barefoot academic teaching. And really interesting to read. I thought, wow, they really have some good tips in here on how to deal with finances, how to deal with team, how to create a team, how to think what kind of space you're going to choose or create for this. So that's
Wow.
something I really
That was
recommend.
also
Yeah.
my last question, as in to ask, do you have just don't give out the whole recipe, but maybe a tip for teachers in any kind of education to from all the knowledge you've gained to share with them that they can maybe experience and try out in their classrooms or outside their classrooms. Also fine. It's happening everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, I think a simple one and a bit banal, maybe one is the we all have our little passions, which we think are beside our main activities. But the student, they feel this. If you bring some of your little passions with you, actually, it can, in principle, only improve. If you don't, it only improves your teaching and then the connection with your students. So it's. And of course, you expose a bit yourself because it's maybe it's just a side thing. You think you're just a beginner music player or whatever, writer or whatever. But it doesn't matter because I again want to see you practicing and seeing you being a beginner somewhere and sharing this because you're passionate, not because you're good, but because you're passionate. It creates another link. And through this link, maybe they will come to you, your field of expertise with another interest and another. So I think one word would be expose yourself. I mean, dare to expose yourself, and this mutual exposure, because students expose themselves. If you, as teacher, you expose yourself, it creates the meeting, and through the meeting, both of us learn, the student and the. So because we think sometimes that we should opposite. protect ourselves and show only what is needed and be very precise and separate things. And this is making the meeting much poorer. And it's a loss for both sides. So
it's polarizing more than that. It's
And this is easy. We all, I mean, this is accessible to any of us. Just if you just try it. I mean, try a bit more exposure, see what happens. And I'm convinced if it's true what you're exposing, you should day by day feel the constructive effect in a teaching setting.
Right. Thank you. Simona, do you want to add anything?
No, I think that was very nicely said. Yeah, it has to do with taking risks too.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That's how we started, right? Yeah. Nice. So I feel like we're coming to a close here. So is there anything that you would like to bring forth before I ask you where to find any more information or look you up? And
I think maybe the two points that just listening to Simon talk and to your questions, I also have the feeling that improgeneering is an amazing space to just suspend judgment. And I think that's an important experience to just say, let's leave judgment aside, which doesn't mean maybe we are going to judge, but we're going to decide what the criteria is before judging. So that means we can always redefine criteria. We can always redefine what kind of judgment we want to invite or not. And I think that's important in a student world, actually, and also in young people's worlds too, when you're defining your identity. And I think that's, I had one more thing I wanted to say, but I can't remember now. It's the opportunity to take decisions. Yeah, I think we talked about agency and developing one's own criteria. And yes, the other thing was daydreaming. I have the feeling that improgeneering offers space for daydreaming. And I feel the students have a lot of pressure. I look around my own sort of social network, and everyone's under a lot of pressure all the time problems, availability problems. And I think it's so important to have some space for daydreaming.
Sounds very spacious. Yeah. All right. Thank you. Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And so if listeners are like, yes, I want to know more about this project. I don't know. I mean, I want to connect or learn, create the ripple effect. Where can they find who, what, and just to make it easy for them?
Yeah, so the keywords also are EPFL, École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne, as you introduced. And there, I'm Simon Henain. And my lab is called Instant Lab.
Instant.
And the word instant actually has a link to instant composition and improvisation. This is why one of the reasons why I gave this name to my lab. And now we have this Performance Lighthouse. So these are the keywords. And there, with these keywords, you get access to the websites with lots of videos, the diaries of the students. We have a little booklet, which we published on the first year. It's in French. And it's in PDF. It's accessible. The full text is accessible on the website. The book you can buy at Chibri Scenario Edition. So it's online. And Barefoot Academy Teaching by Ramiro Tao, Laure Klotzer, and Simon Henain. It was published this year. And it will be soon also available as an ebook. Not yet, but soon it will come out as an ebook. And and we have some also publications. So we published like 5 or 6 papers around this course.
Nice.
And that's it for the key links around my own activities. And so we're very happy to hear also, to hear and know what the others are doing, because I'm sure other people took the same risks and are also having similar experiences. And we're very happy to join forces around these very important steps we're making through academia.
Well, I think Yours is a little bit of an exception of being a program of a year. That is exceptional long after being at the educational embodied education conference. I notice this is a very intense, deep program, and so it sounds very interesting. I think compared to the other projects, which are sometimes more like a week or intensives, and
So we really hope here to, my hope through this podcast and what we do is to give people the courage to dare doing it because it's feasible. It's much more feasible than than it looks. Like before doing the course, when I was imagining doing it, it looks like crazy, impossible, extremely difficult. But once you do it, it works. So I mean, so I'm hoping to trigger this in others. And beyond the romantic aspect of everybody's happy together, there's something beyond superficial idea of just feeling well and being happy and playing. All this is fantastic and part of it, but it's really serious stuff, and it's very important things which are really needed more than ever. And yeah, I hope through this all what we're doing to show, yeah, how sharp and actually focused it is. Although it looks diffuse and romantic, and it is extremely precise and transformative.
Profound.
And we need that. So just we should people should everybody who has a little flame on that should put oxygen to make it blaze because we need that, and I'm speaking now for the students, not from me. I'm speaking with the voice of the student. They want that, and the university wants that, and society wants that. So do it. Come on.
And the teachers
Yeah.
too, the students, let's ripple it on. Oh, thank you, Simon. That's a really good closure. I can't agree more. And I thank you both for coming to share all your knowledge and experience, especially with this Improgeneering project and with the love and enthusiasm knowledge you bring to this project. Thank you for sharing.
Thanks a lot for inviting us on.
Thank you.
Yeah, very welcome.
Deep bow for you for making it till the end. Share this interview with fellow educator who can use some embodied sparks in their classroom. And don't forget to subscribe in your favorite podcast channel to stay updated on new interview releases and more information on the Embodied Educator Dojo in the Embodied Educator Academy coming soon.